Hello, my friends, dear listeners, welcome to another episode of the Nishant Garg Show. I recently announced that I'm hosting a retreat on December 8th to 10th in Austin, Texas. I also published the outline of the retreat in the recent podcast episodes. In case you missed the retreat announcements, here are a few details. We have secured the retreat center, all the facilitators, videographer, and event producer, and we are all set. The retreat center can accommodate up to 15 participants. That means your lodging and food are all included in the ticket. And this place is magical. Right now, we are building a waiting list of people who want to come. Since you have been listening to this podcast, you are invited to get on the guest list before everyone else. I have reserved 5 tickets for the podcast listeners before. The details are available to public around October 10th timeframe. Recently, I interviewed one of the facilitators, Cole Witte, and will start announcing other facilitators soon. If you would like to come to this rite of passage retreat, I would love to see you. I know people love to wait until the last minute. We simply don't have enough capacity for everyone to do that. So, we have only 5 pre-sale tickets to the podcast listeners at the lowest price possible. So, if you know that you want to come to this magical retreat, I encourage you to grab your ticket. You have worked really hard to get where you are and are very grateful for your successes and progress. You have done a fair amount of inner work already by investing in coaching, therapy, or personal development events, and you're committed to regularly feeding your mind and heart through heart-centered podcasts like this and books and practices. But something is missing. You feel stuck or unfulfilled in your love life, career, relationships, inner connection, health, or all of the above. You have a burning desire to feel more connected to yourself, more connected to others, and more connected to the pulse of life itself. You are ready for life to feel better, not because of what you have or what you have achieved or who you are with, but because of how you relate to yourself and to life. Are you feeling a spark to join this retreat? Maybe not 100% sure. Or do you have some fears or questions coming up? Let's explore together if this invitation is right for you. Does any of this sound familiar? You find yourself still seeking external validation or distraction through others or substances or unhealthy media habits. You are feeling frustrated by a lack of partnership in your life and wondering if you will ever find the love you have been searching for. Or you are in a relationship, but you feel unseen, stuck, or unhappy and disconnected in that relationship. You find yourself losing passion or direction with life, manifesting outwardly via weight gain, numbing habits, and isolating yourself. Your inner critic often dominates your thoughts, holding you back from pursuing new goals, dreams, and passions. You struggle with work-life balance, finding it challenging to disconnect from the demands of your high-stress job. Despite your success, you feel a sense of emptiness or unfulfillment that lingers in the background of your life. You have been in a cycle of overthinking, analysis, paralysis, or perfectionism preventing you from taking meaningful action in your life or being able to truly enjoy life. Although you practice some mindfulness activities such as meditation, therapy, or journaling, or you find yourself living in your head a lot and are exhausted from the constant mental chatter, you often feel like you are not able to express yourself fully and authentically. You attach your self-worth on your achievements or material possessions, so when you don't hit a goal or have external validation, you experience a deep low in your confidence, self-esteem, and ability to feel happy or joyful. Is any of this resonating so far? Imagine embracing your imperfections as strengths. Discover the extraordinary power that lies within your unique imperfections, using them as stepping stones to greatness, unleashing your authentic expression, liberating from fear and hesitation. Learn to experience the exhilarating freedom of being holy and unapologetically yourself. Nurturing unconditional self-love. Begin a journey of love that is boundless, unwavering, and starts with the profound love you cultivate for yourself. Rekindling your flames of purpose and passion, ignite a new found zeal for life, paving the way for a flourishing state of well-being and profound soul-enriching connections. Cultivating your inner radiance, reconnect with the wellspring of unshakable confidence, self-esteem, and enduring joy that resides deep within you. So if any of these things is resonating with you, I invite you and I encourage you to join me and other participants on this amazing heart-centered rite of passage retreat. You can find the description, you can find all the details in the episode description. There is going to be a link. When you click on that link, you will go to a landing page where you can see all the details. And still, if you have questions, you can send me an email and we are happy to have a call with you. So without further ado, enjoy this amazing spiritual conversation with my new guest. Richard, welcome to the show.
Hey, Nishan, how you doing?
Well, finally, it's good to have you on the show, and I was looking forward to this podcast recording for quite some time. So before we go in the podcast meet, so I would a little bit give you a background to the audience that how we met. So your wife, Deborah Stengel, was on the podcast 3 years ago, and she lives in Sedona. She talked about her spiritual awakening in Sedona, and this year I was in Sedona and I got the opportunity to meet both of you at your amazing home. And and when I entered in your home, I felt these folks are truly rich from inside and outside. It's not common to meet people who are truly rich from inside and outside. And I spent an hour with you guys and
we really enjoyed it. Yeah, because you're right. You know, we have a lifestyle of abundance. And as you say, it really comes from the inside, but you can see it in the outside as well.
Yes, and outside is a reflection of inside. And inside can be a reflection of outside. So both goes, it's bidirectional. If we speak in terms of tech language, bidirectional. Sure. You know, the outside things can have a good influence on the inside, but the more beautiful the inside is, it will have a major positive impact on the outside. So Richard, you have spent 30, 40 years in Silicon Valley, and now you live in Sedona. From Silicon Valley to Sedona. But before we bridge that gap from Silicon Valley to Sedona, so you grew up studying to be a Catholic priest. So who That's influenced correct. You to become a Catholic priest? So what's your story behind that? If you can share something about your childhood.
Oh, sure. Yeah, well, you know, I grew up in a mixed family, meaning my mother was Catholic and my father was Lutheran. But we were basically raised in the Catholic tradition. And my mother's father was Irish Catholic. And in the Irish Catholic tradition, the oldest son of the family is destined to be the priest. And so I was following the standard role model. And as I was a young boy, I was an altar boy in Catholic school and went to Catholic school and all those things. So as I was growing up through the Catholic school, I studied 4 years of Latin in high school. I went to seminary for a summer before I graduated from high school to find out what seminary school was about. And there were some shocking revelations for me in my experience there, where literally the seminary students on Friday would run out to go into town to get drunk and meet the ladies, if you know what I mean. And it was kind of shocking to me because I was like, well, time out here. I get the point where, you know, in the church, you want to devote your life to your religion and to your faith in the church. But I saw that as sort of a dichotomy, and I couldn't figure out how it works for me. And so basically I looked at that and I said, you know, this is probably not my calling then. And so I kind of separated from the church at that time. But at the same time, although my mother cried for 2.5 years because she was very sad that I would leave the church and et cetera, because, you know, it's as any mother would, they're worried about I'm astray, right? And then she found out a couple of years later after I graduated from college that really, and she really realized I had not left my spirituality. I just left the dogma that wasn't suiting me. And so because of that, she was okay with me as a son again. And, you know, again, it's one of those things where throughout my life, I found myself looking at things evaluating things and experiencing things through my lens of spirituality. And that's how I've lived my life ever since. And actually lived it. I didn't realize I was living it as a child because there was this, you know, the Catholic Church influence, which was a wonderful upbringing, by the way. Do not think it the other way. It's just that when I got to be of an age, I felt my spirituality was of a more important.
Where did you grow up?
Northern Ohio and actually Southern Michigan. So it's sort of Midwestern part of the United States. Very conservative.
So you left Catholicism, and then what did you do after that?
Well, not a lot for a while because I got enthralled in college and almost did a double degree in electrical engineering and physics, which kept me kind of busy because I was trying to, in my own mind, because I was very, very smart from the technical side growing up. My father was an engineer. My mother was an ICU nurse, which means they're pretty good too. So what I was trying to do is understand, you know, and answer the question is like, the universe, what's going on here? Because in nights I would go outside of my little rural town in Ohio, because I lived in the country, and I look up at the sky. I take my telescope out there, my camera out there, and I would just be simply amazed at the star patterns, at the Milky Way, at the moon. And I was convinced there's something bigger out there. I just had to find it. So through my entire college career of physics, I was asking the question of what is God? How is it expressing itself? How do we look at this? Because from my perspective, I always looked at physics as I guess I would say, a closed form, mathematical form of understanding how existence is. Because if you understand it, then you have sort of a way of getting close to what the next step of God is. What's going on there? But I also realized that never fully encompassed what the universe and what people would call God or source. So I always felt that there was this gap between physics and what truly was, and that gap people call metaphysics. So that attracted me to understand that gap. So what did that mean? It meant that I started to meditate.
How old were you when you started to meditate?
22, maybe at the most. But I was drawn to meditation. I was drawn to the inner world and trying to understand like what was going on. You know, I was living in Houston, Texas at the time, and you know, there wasn't a whole lot of resources there, but I would read, I would see some things that'd be interesting, but I'd sit there and have, so I just practiced by myself because I had got myself a house, which is pretty cool as an engineer. And I'd sit there and I'd meditate at night. And I was practicing this one Buddhist meditation where what you would do is you would sit quietly and then you would, in your mind's eye, you would then go out to the universe above you and just go to the infinite. And then with your perception, go down through your body into the earth and then be zero. And I was practicing the open up and down, open up and down through my meditation practice. And next thing I know, I was in the middle of the universe, floating in the middle of stars, looking around. I didn't feel heat, didn't feel cold, no magic carpet underneath me. I was just there looking around and just like, wow. So I had this amazing experience, out of body experience, out of this world experience. And that kind of convinced me that it was sort of what my teacher called a nugget, a golden nugget, that the universe gives you golden nuggets as you go down your spiritual path to continue to give you the motivation to keep walking down that path. So I ended up where I spent a lot of time living overseas. I worked in Singapore, Japan, the Philippines, and I would spend a lot of time, since I was a single guy, I spent a lot of time meditating in my room. I would go out to parks. I would do walks and other things. So it was a very... Although I worked really, I worked 6.5 days a week because
That in 70s or 80s?
Well, this is late 70s and early 80s.
Okay.
And so, you know, so for me, it was a very personal experience of me just doing that practice. And I didn't know anything really of the formal people doing stuff. It was just me just picking things up randomly and doing stuff. Then I went out to San Jose, California, in Silicon Valley in 1987 on a temporary assignment for my company, and did some pretty interesting things. Ended up after 9 months doing some great stuff out there on a temporary basis. He invited me to stay to become the manager of all the technical region, entire company's technical resources in Western United States, because I had gotten myself to a technical level and whatever. So I said, yeah. So I moved out there in 87, and I basically didn't leave until 2017. And in that time, I got into high tech, and I started, I had an offer about 1990 to come back to the state of Texas where my company was located at the time, or stay out there. And I said, well, you know, even though they're going to offer me a job back there, I decided to stay in Northern California because I found that the culture there, the spiritual culture, was much more akin to what I was trying to get myself into. So I stayed out there. It was kind of interesting because then I began to make connections with people in the spiritual community. There was like workshops and other stuff. I saw Ram Dass out there, for example.
In California.
Weekend workshop with him in California. And met people like that. Later on, I saw Jack Kornfield and Tara Barak up in Spirit Rock, up in Northern California. So I started, you know, really beginning to put some pieces together for myself, for my spiritual path. And it formed sort of a web. And then was it in the middle 80s, David Hawkins put out Power Versus Force, if you remember that book or not.
Yes, yes.
It was, you know, for a left brain guy like me, my gosh, that just totally connected to me. And I read it cover to cover. And the thing that I found amazing about that is his levels of consciousness that he, you know, put a grade from 0 to 1,000, 1,000 being sort of, you know, avatar like Buddha, like Jesus, like others, and saw, you know, to see the gradations of how people in their and you can call it vibrations today, right? So I found that to be very interesting, and I started investigating that and all the things around it. So yeah, and then after a while, I found myself in a situation where I was introduced to a meditation center in San Jose, and met my guru at the time. And started studying underneath him, starting with energy practices. And because the concept was interesting in his school, he had his concepts for schools from Vietnam in terms of some of the practices we did. And there's a couple fundamental differences, because the way we're meditating in his style, which I've adopted ever since, was that most people, when they start meditation practice, where do you start? Well, you have the same concept of chakras, but where do you start in your meditation for most practices?
We just sit.
But where do you sit? But where do you concentrate first when you sit? When you're thinking of
breathing,
chakras?
Breath.
Yeah, but where? Where most people sit? The root.
Root chakra.
The root chakra, the connector down to earth, right? You basically connect it first. Then you go up to the second chakra, then the third chakra. So you basically work up the chakras, right?
To the crown.
To the crown. And so most practices were going from root to the crown as a practice. And you would then, you know, we'll practice our third chakra today. You work on the first chakra, the second chakra, open them up, and you do the third. You don't talk about the fourth, fifth, sixth, or seventh yet because you're on the third. Well, that's great. Well, this practice was just the opposite. This practice started at your crown chakra. Open that up first. You could ask the question, why would you want to do that? Why? It's like, why would you go opposite to like everybody else? Well, here's the answer. And to me, it kind of opened up my perspective. And I'll explain what I mean by that in a second. So here it is. If you start with the chakra to source, to the infinite, and ask that energy to do whatever is correct for you, in your body, to clear your body, to get the channel open. What's not included in that equation?
Everything is included if you open your crown chakra.
But what's not included when you do it that way?
Your root?
Your ego, your mind.
Your ego and your mind is not included. Okay.
It's gone. It's not part of it, because you're giving it, the first thing you're doing is saying, connect up here, let whatever that is take control. You make the decision on what I need today to learn, what I need today to grow, what today needs to change in my energy field. It's not me going off saying, hey, man, I got a problem with my solar plexus. Can we work on my fourth chakra today? That's all ego. Now, you may need work.
So
you hear the difference?
So I have so many questions on this research. So over the past 1 year, I have focused a lot on my heart chakra. You know, this I've been fascinated by opening my heart to different kinds of modalities, massage, chiropractor, acupuncture, working with practitioners in Sedona, Ranjita. I work with Ranjita whom you recommended to
beautiful.
Me. And
your friends in Austin, you introduced us to amazing practitioners.
And absolutely. I had Ranjita on the podcast recently, and mm-hmm. she talked about coming home to your heart, coming home to your soul. And what you're describing is that in this meditation, which your Vietnamese guru gave that to you to open your crown chakra, open your source. Does that mean that connecting to the source first, when you connect to that source, you're not in your mind and you're not in your ego? Right. How do we practice that? Could you guide us through that practice? Well, if I want to practice that practice. What does that practice look like in the practical terms?
What does it practice? Okay, so the problem with answering this is that everybody's experience is a little bit different. So that there's a caveat here, okay? So what works for me may or may not be, you know, the formula that may work for you. So please understand, this is going to be my personal experience, and I'll share it with you and any of the other listeners, but please understand, you know, the mileage varies, right? So for me, so when I drop in, and there's pluses and minuses to how I go in, is that when I go into my meditations, the practice I use to go in, and people have many different, I basically count my breaths and count down. And by the time I hit five, I'm out. I'm gone. What it means by gone is that literally I'm out of my body somewhere. Now, where I'm at, I can't tell you. My guides tell me that they can interact with me because I'm out of my body, out of the third dimension. I can't tell you where that is or how it feels, et cetera. But because I'm able to basically go out that direction by just letting go and just connecting up that way, that's a different, and then heal everything going down that way. So what happens is, and if you're a HeartMath fan out in California, where they talk about the mind-body connection, It's a technique that can actually promulgate that, meaning that if you're starting off here and you say, I'd like to have my mind connect to my heart, and then what you do is then you visualize running energy like in a circle through your crown chakra, down through your pineal gland, down through your chakras, into your heart, out of your front of your chakra, back up and around and loop around and image and visualize energy going through. And many people do colors, for example, white color, platinum color, silver color, sparkly color, whatever, and just go wrap around, and just do that for 15, 20 minutes. Then do that same practice from here down to your solar plexus. Yeah, practice down here to your practice. And then do the rotation. Just practice that and just visualize that. And when you do that, when you breathe in, you're breathing in the white lights, the sparklies, the platinum down deep into your chest. Because when you breathe, and as you talked about earlier, before we turned on, the breath is so important here. And breathing down into your deep part of your lungs, not the shallow, but deep breathing, bringing that energy in. And then when you breathe out the little black bits of crud, of energy that's no longer yours. It's the stuff you can let go of out. And that practice of cleaning. And you basically just go down through your chakras, heads down that direction, not that way. And you just practice that.
It's in the circular form. It's kind of a tantric practice where you allow the energy to flow in the circular form.
Right. And there are many people who use that through tantric practices as well with a partner. You're doing breathing exercises, you're sharing energy together, and whether you share, you know, straight from your crown chakra down to your first or second chakra, depending upon what you want to do, down to your base, it all depends that. But it's a process of, you know, cleaning. It's a process of connecting. And as you go further and further from top to bottom, you're letting the universe do the cleaning. You don't have to get involved. See, again, the same, you don't need your mind involved. You just give it up and just do the visualization and just ask for the clean it. And what cleaning means, the universe will interpret. We don't have to make that decision. So that's giving it up, right? Giving up the control, giving up the power, giving up the ego necessity to define, I need to have this zit fixed on my hand right now. Fix it. You know, you can do that, but you're missing the point because your ego's still in the middle of that.
So going back into your childhood days, when you started meditation when you were 22, you were going to be studying Catholic priest. And so
I'd given up Catholicism by then, but yeah.
I'm curious, how did you develop and or cultivate this curiosity about life, spirituality, God, existence? Did your parents instill all of those things
in you? Yeah. Yeah, I think so. You know, my mother and father, you know, the word devout, you know, it's been used in many ways. For example, my grandmother, my mother's mother, she lived in a small town to the southeast of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And her house, which is gorgeous, you know, big, tall house that was six doors down from the Catholic Church. So every morning she would rain, shine, snow, or whatever, she would go down for 6:30 Mass in the morning. And then many evenings she would show up for afternoon prayers. And then, of course, Saturday and Sunday, if there was, she would show up then. So she was very devout in the sense she's very connected to the Catholic Church. And so my mother picked up much of that. And that connection to the spirituality of that. And so, of course, instilled that in myself when I was growing up. So it was a good upbringing.
Yeah. So what does connection to spirituality mean to you personally? What does that even mean to you? Because everyone has different lenses of spirituality.
Well, my perspective is that there's no lens.
ego creates lens.
Ego's a lens. Yeah. I mean, look, I mean, if you truly believe, as I do, that God resides in me and God resides in you, what do you call God, source, Shiva, whatever you want, I don't care. And that's, by the way, the reason why the Catholic Church wasn't doing it for me. Sorry for Catholics online. What I mean by this is that I didn't see the need, because I'm a mystic. I didn't see the need to have somebody between me and my God. I didn't see it. When God's inside me already, you don't need to interpret it for me. I feel it here in my breast, in my bones, in my heart, in my soul. You can tell me whatever you want about a book, but you can't tell me how I feel in here and the connection I feel for the Almighty. Everybody has that connection. You don't need a book to tell you how you feel inside. That's the reason why I literally walked away, because for me, it was about a mystical experience with the divine that I knew everybody has at some level. Whether you accept it, whether you push it away, call it something else, call it indigestion, I don't care. But everybody has that because we are all one of the same cloth. And that part I did get from my teachings from the Catholic Church. And I really am beholden to that because it's a very strong, strong thing inside of me. But having somebody interpret God's word for me was where I had to draw the line. So, I'm sorry, it's already inside me. I will listen to my own verbs and nouns and feelings and connection inside, as I hopefully believe other people should too.
Yeah, I think
really strong
puts God above you, that God is somewhere else that we cannot reach that level. And
put somebody in between. And what happens when you put somebody in between you and anything else? There's a power issue then it's there. And that's unfortunate. What we've seen with humankind is that any sort of organization or whatever gets in between you and source, there's some sort of politics being played. And I mean politics in a very broadest sense.
So you started meditation at the age of 22. And then when did you enter in Silicon Valley? And what were you doing in Silicon Valley? What were you working as?
Well, before I was in Silicon Valley, I was an electrical engineer working for a high-tech company. And got into more of the semiconductor manufacturing side and engineering side, et cetera. So I was going around the world basically doing manufacturing, this and that. But I was doing leading edge manufacturing. I was developing new manufacturing processes and such, going around the world, implementing them, qualifying them, and doing all that stuff. And so I would go to these places like Singapore and Japan, the Philippines for temporary assignments to, you know, put that stuff in. These are like 6-9 months, a year long processes. And then when everything was done, I would go home for a while and then find a new job, go do something else. So after doing that and then heading out in 87 to Silicon Valley and staying out there, I basically And I had all, if for those people in the high tech world, there was basically semiconductor design tools, and there were things called ASICs, application specific integrated circuits. Again, sorry for those people who don't understand the acronyms, but the bottom line is, how do you make a chip, right, to do a certain thing? And so I was running the design centers for them and all the application engineering, and my customers were Cisco and Apple and, you know, Sun Microsystems, and you name all the high name people. And the team that I was part of, that actually before I got there, was the first ones in the world to do what's called the Julie doll, which was the very first speaking, talking doll in the world. It was a group down in Irvine that had done this, and they were also my responsibility when I took over the entire Western region. So there was a lot of really interesting bleeding edge stuff that was going on there. So again, I was able to observe in the Silicon Valley high tech world, people creating, innovating. And saw a lot of collaboration for that, but also came from the perspective is that teams didn't really create new things, individuals did inside of teams. And so I always have this philosophical debate when people say, well, teams create. Well, yeah, but one of the team members is the first person that brings it up. You don't create in a team, you create individually within a team. So that's a philosophical debate I have with a lot of people who believe team-oriented is the only way to go. It's a combination. Does that help?
It does. And so in 1987, how old were you in 1987?
31.
I was born in 1987, by the way.
Hey. Nishan, it's not about age, friend. It's not about
age. Oh, yeah. You look fucking awesome.
Thanks, so, man. Well, so it's amazing because you used to say that because, you know, a wonderful relationship with your partner really does help you in that area.
We will come back to that. We will talk about relationship-centric. How? Okay. What does your relationship look like with Deborah, your current partner? Mm-hmm. So going back into Silicon Valley, you were meditating mm-hmm. when you were 22, and then you were working in the high tech. You went to Asia, Philippines, Singapore, Japan. Right. So did you talk about your spirituality openly at work? And how did you?
No.
And how did you manage your personal life?
It was two different things, sir.
Can we double click on that?
You could put double underline on that. No. No, I was actually writing poetry in the 80s too. I mean, oh my God, he was writing poetry too. Yeah. And, you know, I've got volumes of poetry that someday might get published that, you know, I put in the back burner for some books or whatever. But no, I was opening up, as you discussed, you know, opening up that getting more heart-centric, because I definitely grew up in a head-centric world. And certainly the high tech was exceedingly head-centric at the time, but living in my heart at the same time. And you couldn't tell anybody that you cared about petting puppies and stuff, so to speak, although that's the wrong metaphor, I'm sure. Because it was something that wasn't really the ethos of high tech or the ethos of the business culture at the time. So, you know, you had to, like many people growing up in sports, you had to be a tough guy. So you had the similar sorts of things you had to do. So since it was contrary, you hide it. So again, going back to a story that I told you earlier, that when I was making the decision about my relationships and how I had these year and a half, 2 year long after kind of a tough divorce back in the mid early 2000s, I was out meeting these people and I was on Match.com and meeting wonderful people. And I'd have year and a half, 2.5 year long relationships, which were fabulous, wonderful people, still friends. But I wasn't able to get to the point where I could have a long-term relationship. And at the end of the day, when I went back to my guru and was talking with him and his partner, it became apparent there was only one thing common in all that. That was me. And so then I had to ask myself, well, what am I presenting to the outside world? What is the energy that I'm putting out there that's attracting these wonderful people but are not the long-term relationship? So the switch for me that you basically asked was in 2016. I'd run out pretty long in my lifetime before I figure this out. And I figured that what I had to do is take my Match.com profile, which basically talked about the four adult ice hockey teams that I was on. My kid played ice hockey at the very highest level, North American level. I had San Jose Sharks ice hockey tickets as a season tickets. So my life was kind of about hockey because I enjoyed hockey. I'm a good-sized guy. I love the sport. So my Match profile literally said, if you don't like hockey, need not apply, because I realized my life was wrapped around that. But it became very apparent that that wasn't going to get me a long-term relationship, because that wasn't who I really was. So the point I got to, Nishant, was realizing that I had to take the risk. And the term I use, and some people, you know, hear it this way, is that I had to be honest and authentic about who I was. So I rewrote my profile. I wrote my profile to say, in my very first paragraph, that my spirituality is the most important thing to me. I came out with the risk, and I lost 90% of my friends, like that.
In 2016.
Yeah, why?
From 19?
Because I'm a weirdo guy who's now the meditating guy who, you know, is different.
So if I understand correctly, in 80s, 90s, even in early 2000s, you never shared your spirituality to others?
Not publicly, no. I kept it to myself. I kept it to my private. I kept it to other friends and, you know, different groups. You know, I didn't have my groups or friends mix. I had my business friends and a couple other friends. I had some running buddies and such, because I like to run a lot. Never talked about meditating with them. I kept that to myself.
That's a long time. If someone listened to this podcast, might be wondering that, Richard, you...
Yeah, like, Richard, are you an idiot?
Are you an idiot
for waiting so long? You can say it. It's okay.
Yeah. So, Richard, so you spent years and big tech companies.
Here's the thing. Yeah, but I was really, Nishant, I was really good at what I did, okay? I mean, the first startup I got involved with went public in 1999. I was killing it, man.
So were you killing it because of spiritual beliefs, or
in business, I was doing great stuff in business. Now, one of the things that I never told anybody, that's shocker here, I never told anybody in public, is that I was actually doing muscle testing. Kinesiology, mental testing, is that the concept is that our bodies are sort of energy receptacles that we live in, you know, this three-dimensional thing. That since we are actually, again, my model is that we are multidimensional, infinite beings who choose to be live in three-dimensional in these bodies, in these suits, so to speak, that when you look at yourself that way, what does it mean? What do you think?
I'm not sure.
Well, I'm kind of losing my train of thought. That's why I'm reaching out to you. But the idea being is that when you finally do get to the point where you realize what really is who you are, which is your spiritual connection. And yeah, you can have that when you're having a business meeting or whatever. But when I was doing kinesiology, I was, for instance, in marketing. I would sit there and I say, well, look, I'm trying to help design a product. And the question is, should I go into market A, market B, market C? And I would sit at my desk, because I was in the marketing, strategic marketing, helping drive both small startup companies and large major companies, because I was entrepreneuring and entrepreneuring many different parts of my career, is I would literally feel the strength of my left arm. Because universal truth is universal truth. There's only one yes, right, or wrong. Doesn't matter the time of day. It's true today. It's true yesterday. It's true tomorrow. So if you have your arm out and you push down, and if it's true, your arm will hold. If it's false, it will not hold. It's weak. Your body goes weak with falseness. Your body is strong with truth. And this is universal truth. This is not man truth. This is not ego truth. And so I found myself after a while reflecting, I said, how come I made all these right decisions about going to this market, developing this product? And what I found is I was actually making those decisions and then going back and finding the data to justify for everybody else why I made that call. You hear what I'm saying?
Yeah, and you didn't tell anyone because about your experience.
Of course I didn't, because everybody thought I'd be mad and nuts. What do you mean you're muscle testing? What the heck is that? That's not a scientifically AMA-approved procedure. Of course not. Nowadays, people see muscle testing in the spiritual world as a way to validate truth, more so. And that's not always universally accepted. So I was doing that even then, not even realizing I was doing that. I didn't know what it was. It was just, if I felt weak, I knew it was not a good idea. I just learned if it felt strong, it's a good idea. And I just followed that. my intuition. So I always had that through my career, but I never really understood it. It never really came to the surface, but it was always there. Does that make sense in terms of?
Cause it does.
Like, so one day I woke up and I said, oh, well, now I'm going to, you know, look at life differently. No, it was actually a series of things that I was doing that I didn't even realize myself what I was doing until later in introspection or reflection back into time. I said, well, gosh, that's what I was doing. That's interesting.
So can you say that your success in the Silicon Valley was also as a result of your spiritual beliefs, because you were very spiritual, even though you didn't come out as a spiritual being in your personal life?
I'm not going to pin it all on spirituality, because there is an awful lot of hard work, an awful lot of teamwork. And I mean, as was it Edison's, and there's a lot of perspiration and a couple of 1% of inspiration there. And I worked a lot of hours and worked very hard to the point. Every 2.5 years I would burn myself out, which wasn't a very good thing career wise, by the way. So, but that was me, because I totally believed what I was doing. I was all in, right? And I didn't learn self-care, which is another skill set many people don't know in that world. But for me, it was really trying to figure out what was going on here. And when I finally stepped back from that for a while, and I ran into myself into the ground by 2003.
What happened in 2003?
I had a medical problem that knocked me out, literally almost killed me.
Did my share
wake up call? Well, it's fair enough to say that I was not able to basically go back into a Silicon Valley job and work 80 hours a week, which was required. And the reason why I say 80 is because I was traveling 1 or 2 weeks every month overseas for business.
Wow.
And, you know, it's great for when you're a million miles club in 3 different, you know, airlines, but it's awful for your personal life, your family life, and your health. And so I crashed and burned, and it was bad. And so it was time for me to make a change. And it happened in 2003. Took me a year and a half to kind of get everything back together. And I had a young kids at the time. And so I figured I didn't want to necessarily get back on the train of traveling overseas. And I figured let's figure out what I could do. So I changed horses in the middle of the stream. And so what I did is I find myself with an opportunity to go to work as a college adjunct professor.
Yeah. What do you teach?
I taught all things business, because I had international business experience, startup experience, large company experience. I bought companies, sold companies. I did a gamut of stuff. So I had this tremendous amount of skill set. So I basically taught starting business operation management, which was my first thing, since I did a lot of work in the manufacturing area, understood total quality control, all the aspects of, you know, SPC charts and all this stuff. And I was in the original Duran training back in the day, back in the 70s and 80s, when Duran was actually teaching us how to compete in the world with the Japanese, who were kicking our butts at the time, because they understood what total quality control really meant. So for me, taking that experience and then teaching kids at San Jose State University, and the interesting thing about San Jose State, in California in general, there's a kind of a three-tier educational system. At the top end, you've got the UCs, which are the PhD, you know, type of institutions, and then you have the CSU, which is the middle ground, the 4-year degrees, and then you have essentially the 2-year. So I was at San Jose State, which is kind of the middle ground. They did have PhDs, but they're the middle. And the interesting thing is that if you look at San Jose State, is that the majority of the students were minority students, Latino, African-American, Asian students.
Indians.
So yeah, in India. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. East Asians. Yeah, absolutely. And so when I went there, I looked at the demographic and I thought to myself, and I started asking questions of my students, and I found out a third of them worked one part-time job and were going to school full-time. Two-thirds, or another third, was working 2 full-time jobs and going to school full-time. And the other third basically was just going to school. And the commitment level for these students was unbelievably high. Also, what I also noticed, almost every one of them were the first person in their families to get a college education. The first. Yeah. So when I recognized that, I took it as a, how do I say that? I took it as an honor and as a privilege to be able to help them understand the chasm between blue collar, which their family is all blue collar. I didn't care where they grew up around the world, to white collar living, to have maybe a high school, if that, education, to have an ecology. And what's the difference? Because the mindset of each is entirely different. So helping them learn, what does it mean to have a college education, means that when you have a degree in sociology, that doesn't mean you go down to work at the local garage as a grease monkey. No, you have an opportunity to do much more with your life and change the vector of your entire family into the American dream that we all came here. My family got here, both sides of my family, in the 1890s and the 1790s. We're all immigrants in this country. So my family had a chance. My mother and father, for example, were the first in their family to have a college education. My father was able to do that only because he went to World War II and had a GI Bill. I saw the difference in my family and saw those of us, like my brother and I, who were college educated versus those in our family who weren't. I saw that disparity. And I said, if I can help these young students cross that boundary and change trajectories of their families going forward, I need to take this seriously. I need to really help them understand it. And so I did. And it was an incredible experience. I mean, I taught there from 2005 to 2017 for 12 years and taught everything from operations management, business 101. I was one of the first people in the world to develop online curriculum for college, because my innovative background is, you know, the people that were there who were tenured and such, they said, well, you know, we need to find somebody who's willing to do this. And I was capable. So they asked me to put together this entire curriculum. I did it, put it online, got budget from the university to go do that and put some of the most amazing stuff out there that they may, I'm not sure if they're still using it or not, but allowed me to take classes from 40 to then 200 to 400 at a time. And with the majority, so it was a hybrid class, meaning that you'd be in class a couple times a week for lectures and quizzes and other stuff. And then everything else was online. You'd have quizzes online, stuff online, et cetera. And you'd mix them all together into a hybrid model of education, because my belief is education as life is experiential. You have to really get it. You have to learn it. And you can't. And so I have a lot of people who came from other parts of the world who reading the book and taking a test is called learning. No. That's learning how to take tests. The experience of having that information into you and using it is where you learn. So that's what I did. And as a result of that, one of the gentlemen in a program at San Jose State saw me and saw what I was doing. So invited me to join a U.S. State Department program to teach essentially the vice president of Pakistan and his staff in Al-Aqsa University, which is a 1.3 million student university, which is the country of Pakistan educational system. So I put together a curriculum with a couple other people, sat down with them. In my very first meeting with them, got my beautiful slides, sitting there, sitting around the table. I asked them the first question: where does creativity come from? Why would I ask that question of them? If you look at, for instance, Pakistan, and you look at the cultural norms within Pakistan, and you look at the cultural norms of the United States, they're dramatically different, right? Silicon Valley is about risk, innovation. You know, some people make claim of, oh, I failed 50 times before I was successful. And that's a badge of courage, right? Badge of honor. Well, in other parts of the world, you can't fail once.
That's in India.
Pakistan.
If you fail in India.
Pakistan, you can't fail. There is a high social cost of failure. So you can't play by the same rules there as you did. So for me as an American instructor, going to them saying, hey, innovation, let's go do that, that's probably not the right approach to make them successful in the long run. And when you're talking with the vice president of Pakistan, risk aversion is a big part of their deal. So asking them the question first, where does creativity come from, allowed them to open up safely the conversation of how do we do something new?
How did they
respond? Because what's the answer? They were shocked. why were they shocked? Because they didn't expect me to come from the heart. Because I said, well, where is it? I said, show me on your body where it comes. They all went like this, but they all touched their heart. I said, that's right. That's where innovation comes. It's not the head. It's the heart. That's where creativity comes from. They already understood that from their cultural norms. They just didn't understand how to make incremental innovation that's safe. And that's what I showed them how to do then within their cultural norm.
Then how does someone connect to their heart to tap into the creativity? If what you're saying is all the creativity comes from the heart, then what do we do to really be creative?
So if, again, talking out loud, right? What comes from the head? Thoughts. What comes from the heart? Intuition. Intuition comes from where? The universe.
Mm-hmm.
Your brain comes from what? The neural network that you've programmed over the X amount of years of your life. That's where that comes from up here. That's not a limitation in your heart. Your heart's connected to the universe. That's where you're getting your information, which was the point I was making earlier about creativity. Where does it come from? It comes from source, which comes through your heart. So people who have mind-heart connection and coherence are using the best of both worlds, right? Because you're using the information you have in your present from your past tense, which is, you know, your present life, head, with the intuition of from source, connect the dots. Guess what? You can do whatever you want to do because you're an infinite human being with infinite potential. See how that works?
Now, yes.
So let's take this another step further in my story. And this is sort of an interesting part too. Because of that, and I actually sat down with U.S. State Department officials debriefing that entire process, they liked the idea of what I was talking about so much. I got invited to be U.S. envoy to the vice president of Pakistan to basically put together a 10-year strategic plan for Pakistan for the entire country for education. Now, this probably shouldn't be on the podcast, but I'm just going to share this with you because it's a little political and, you know, I don't want people to take this wrong. And I sat there and I said, wow, this is interesting. And I was single at the time, right? So I was like, okay.
In 2017.
Said, well, yeah, this is early 2016, maybe 2015. Okay. This is when U.S. and again, this is the reason why you can't have it on. This can't have it because U.S. and Pakistan at the time are having good relations, not so much now. And so basically, I said, well, how's this work? They said, well, look. He said, what you do is you put together a proposal, send it to the U.S. State Department, you know, budget and all the stuff, what you're going to do. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, for example, make sure you have in your proposal your security detail. What do you mean? Said, you know, the Humvee guys that are behind you, in front of you, and you're in the middle, when they come from your compound where you live, drive you to the vice president's palace to do work in a different way every day, and then go back a different way every way back home to your compound secure at night with your security detail. So I sat and thought about that for a bit. Came back a week or so later. I said, and actually I walked out of that meeting. I said, you know, this is really interesting. I'm not sure if I really have the courage to take this job. I said, but if I did, it's going to be a hell of a book. So I declined because there are some jobs that you just can't win at. And that one seemed to be, for the circumstances around it, so difficult. But if I'd have done it, I'd have helped 130 million people on this planet have a better life. So we all have these choices we make. And if I'd have done that, guess what? It would not be in Sedona today.
So you declined the offer. You declined the offer and you were in San Jose. You were living in San Jose at the time.
Right. And I continued my spiritual things. I was continued with my, you know, my meditation practice with my, you know, Wednesday nights down at the meditation center, doing other sessions with Guru and other people around town, doing all sorts of stuff and continuing to, you know, step into my spiritual life.
And nobody knew about your spiritual life until to the 2016.
Other than my closest, yeah, other to my closest friends, right? And then my meditation center friends knew that, of course, but that was a group of, what, 30 or 40 people max, right? And then I got to the point where I realized, I couldn't find really a life partner that I needed. So that's where I had to make the change. And I had to, I rewrote my match.com profile that was more about me and my spirituality. And once I sort of became more authentic, again, that's when my current wife, Deborah, came forward from the universe, because I was now ready. Because if I was not able to express who I really am in that way, that authentic way, I would not be ready for my wife, Deborah, who lived her life that way as well.
So I keep asking about 2016, because that was a time when my enlightenment or new journey started to happen, because I turned 36 in July 1st week. And up until I was 30, I was living a successful life in tech, you know, making money and amazing mindset, growth mindset, and everything I had externally. But it's some things happen when life turn inward.
Yes.
So, and I love to connect with you, because you have that amazing balance of left brain and right brain. You know, you come from tech, high tech, and the entrepreneurship, and I connect with you at that level. You know, it's we all are everything in life. How can we connect all the dots? So I'm curious, in your previous marriage, how were you married once, or how you were married once, or how many times are you married?
I was actually technically married only once before, but my second relationship, which I said it was marriage-like because we were living in sin, which means we didn't get married, but we moved her two sons and my son together in a big house and, you know, did the blended family thing.
How was your relationship with your former wives like?
Well, my first one, not very good. Today is a non-speaking thing, so I don't want to say much more than that. It was a very difficult separation, and very difficult other than that. So,
got it. Thank you for sharing. So you were in San Jose,
and the second one, for example, we're still friends. In fact, she and her sons moved to Prescott, which is before I came out here years ago. So it was like funny that she came to Northern Arizona, and so did I years later. And actually, I had lunch with her a little while ago with my current wife, Deborah, and they got to meet and talk and got along real well. So that was really nice.
Awesome. So you moved to Sedona from San Jose. How did that move happen?
Very quickly. So I'm going to give you some details of when, and this is my perspective, when I decide to believe, for example, in spirituality, when I get messages. The question anybody has when you get a message, no matter how you get it, do you trust it? Do you believe it? Many people who hear voices and such, the first question is it me? Is it somebody else? Is it the devil? You know, whatever the is, can you trust it? So when I first came out here in the beginning of 2017, after Deborah and I met via Skype, remember those days when Skype was around, and we started talking on Skype, and we had this relationship where for 8 or 10 weeks, I guess, we would talk for 2 to 3 times a night on Skype for 2.5 hours at a time. And we just talk and talk and talk and get to know each other. It has this wonderful sort of dance and relationship and such. And because of my school schedule, I wasn't able to really come visit her, because she had commitments through the time she couldn't come out to San Jose. So the first time we could actually get together was in January of 2017. So I came out here then to visit her. And one of the things I wanted to do when I came out here, because I knew who she was, I saw her videos and Sedona Soul Adventures and stuff. And I said, I'd like to do a soul adventure, you know, because I'm into personal development. I want to do this. I mean, I know I'm going to meet you too, but can I do a soul adventure, please? You know? Yeah. And she said, no, I don't want you to do that, because I want you to be with me. I said, okay, but can we find a compromise? So the answer is yeah. And so what she did is, you know, she did up a mini soul adventure for me. And so I met an astrologer, I met other sorts of people, which were fabulous. I mean, her practitioners, as you probably know, are amazing. I'll claim they're the best in Sedona,
you know what?
Which means they're pretty much the best in the world, because the people who come here to work for her are pretty much the best. I mean, I'm not bragging. It just seems to be that way. So we had this incredible session with this one lady who full body channels Kuan Yin, the Chinese goddess similar to Virgin Mary in the Catholic tradition, but it's a Chinese version of love and compassion, Kuan Yin. So we both sit down, and normal what happens for couples with Kuan Yin is they talk about your relationship and such. But as soon as the full channel come in, Kuan Yin started talking about how you're supposed to be together. This is, you know, destined in the stars. And you know, I'm going like, whoa, hold on here. See, your astrologer said we're supposed to be together. This other person is supposed to be together. And this was, and so I'm thinking to myself, I'm getting set up, aren't I? I mean, is this just like, because they all work for her, right? Come on, you got to think, your brain's got to think, right? But I got out of that session, and what I walked away from that session, and by the way, Deborah didn't hear any of that. She didn't have the same thing I did. I felt that Kuan Yin betrothed Deborah and I right then and there. Ah, yeah, exactly. So it was the most amazing, because you know, Kuan Yin was running energy through us to, you know, kind of connect us and get our energy vibration up to do this amazing work. Because yeah, both of you are supposed to do this amazing work together with Sedona Soul Ventures. You're supposed to do all this other stuff together. We're gonna help you get going here. We're gonna give you the energetic kickstart. It was amazing stuff. I mean, I never experienced that. I mean, I've energetically my master, Viet Nguyen, back in San Jose, he would channel both Jesus or Kuan Yin, depending upon the day. And so he actually brought in Kuan Yin, and I felt Kuan Yin energy one day during the meditation come kind of like down, like you're going through a water, you're coming up through water, and you feel the energy coming into your body, and you would feel this energetic surge in your body. You're like, wow, this is amazing. This, you can feel the love. You can feel the energy of love and compassion through your body, through every pore of your, every bone, every bit of your muscle, every bit of your energy. And so I felt that again, sitting there with Deborah, and it was amazing. It was an experience that I cannot describe in words, but it was one of those things where I was convinced at that moment, this is it. I'm all in, because I jokingly say, okay, so how many of you who are listening to this podcast, when a god or a demigod says, go do something, that you say, nah, let's not do that? How many of you would actually say that? Think about it.
Including me.
I don't know about you. I mean, what's your point of view? I mean, if a god or a demigod says, go do A, I'm going to go do A. And if I felt like I'm betrothed to this beautiful, amazing woman, Deborah, I'm going to follow through on that. So I proposed to her that April on the beaches of Aruba in April.
In 10 weeks? How long were you dating for?
Yeah, so it was from like the beginning of January to the end of April. We were married that October. Absolutely, that's quick. Absolutely, that's quick. It's lightning fast. So when you ask me how was the transition, which is what this story is all about, from San Jose to Sedona. So when I left in January, I was in the Phoenix airport calling my friends in Aruba. Said, hey, I want to bring this gal I met. I want to propose to her, because I already knew, because I was, you know, Kuan Yin betrothed me. I'm in the airport. I said, hey, I want to come. Can you help set me up and where to go and how to do this? And where's the perfect place to propose to her? So I had all my friends in Aruba helping me set this all up. So when we got there, I had the plan. They gave us a week of their timeshare, gorgeous, on Eagle Beach, beautiful place. At a place called Passions on the Beach, and this is not a commercial, but this is where we went to, where they every night they put fresh tables out literally on the beach with tiki torches and stuff. We're on table number one, and everybody around us, including the waiter, Deason, knew what was going down after dessert. My proposal, she didn't, and they set it up perfectly that way. And I proposed to her on the beach that night. She said, thank goodness, yes. There was a risk here. Think about it, Nishan. You know, she and I joke about this. I said, you know, Deborah, you know, if you didn't say yes, I wouldn't really work. She goes, what do you mean? I said, I probably would have got out of my chair and walked into the ocean and drowned myself. I said, that would have been how despondent I was. But she said yes, and we haven't looked back ever since.
So that was in October 2017.
Well, no, that was April 2017. In October 2017, we were married. October 7th, 2017.
In Sedona. You got married in Sedona.
In Sedona, yeah. At a gorgeous place called Mariposa that has a 270-degree view of the Red Rocks. at 3 o'clock, just at the perfect astrological time for us to get married.
So I'm curious, this is so fascinating a story. I'm curious that, so your spiritual life individually and with Deborah, mm-hmm. your wife, and as mm-hmm. together, how your spiritual life has evolved since 2017 after you have gotten married?
Well, you know, that's a great question. And maybe the best way I can answer this is that it's in the world of, or in the, under the heading of manifestations. What do I mean? I wanted a partner who had as deep spiritual conviction and connection as I had, who believes similar to me about how the universe is, what is the universe, what's our role in it, blah, blah, blah. She did. She met me in all of those ways and had the same wherewithal and the same authentic and honesty and integrity to say that I have my core wounds. You've got your core wounds. My core wounds will come up and I'll vomit over you every so often because that's what core wounds do. And she vomits her core wounds on me every so often. But after the dust settles, we take responsibility for our own stuff. That we go do work and we support each other. And that's the part. And when you do that over and over and over, it's much like the story I was talking about when I was practicing, you know, the chakra clearing, when I go from, you know, I do the looping of the energy around. It's the same thing. When you go over and over and scrub and scrub and scrub and scrub and scrub and take layer off and tear off and layer off, and you're both committed to that process. And what you find is as you go through it, and let's put it this way. If I had a mind and my mind said, I want to be in Albuquerque, New Mexico, 3 years from now with my wife, and I set that as the goal, and I don't end up in Albuquerque, I'll think my life is absolutely the most awful, dreadful thing that's ever happened because I didn't achieve that goal. But how about if I said it this way? I don't know where we're going, but as long as I'm with you on the journey, it's going to be fun, it's going to be interesting, and I'm going to stay with you. That's the difference. I'm not going to let my mind control my manifestations anymore. I'm going to let my heart tell me I want to experience a larger world, universe, God, bring it to me the way I need it. And some of us believe in karma and such and believe that it's kind of written in stone, if you want to take that perspective, that we have a certain set of decisions we make along the way. And it's kind of like going through a maze, right? Some people use that model. It's not my choice. My only choice is what I decide to do today, tomorrow. What my future is up to God. It's up to the universe.
You're listening to universe. You're listening to God. And that takes courage to release every the control.
And every minute of every day, I'm doing that.
If I may share a quick story, I went to Sedona last year, first time. I spent 7-8 days, and I did not have a good experience in Sedona. I came to Austin, and I said, I'm never going to go back to Sedona. I had the worst experience. Sure. I felt as a victim of someone's trauma. Someone basically had put a blame on me energetically.
Sure.
And I felt very off energetically last year for 4 or 5 months. My entire ground had shaken up. And I was getting a lot of help from therapy, you know, coaching and healing. Sure. And then I went to Asheville, North Carolina last year in 2022. And I happened to meet with a healer. Mm-hmm. We were strangers. It meant to happen. I met with her. And sure. She's my spiritual guide. And in January of 2023, she said, are you planning a trip somewhere? I said, no, I'm not planning a trip. She said, maybe Sedona, you should go back to Sedona. I said, why I should go back to Sedona? She says something had happened to you energetically.
Of course, you're going like, hold it, this sucks. That place sucks, man. What's
and
going on, right?
she channeled and she said, this is your time to go back and reclaim your lost. This is the opportunity to reclaim your power that is lost in the land of Sedona. And I went to Sedona, and she said that meet with a Vedic astrologer. And I kept searching around the Vedic astrologer in Sedona, and I found Denise Harness, which Deborah, your wife, knows Denise. So she made an intro. So I met with Denise.
Well, Dennis is, you know Dennis, his heritage, right? And you know how he has brought Vedic astrology from India into the United States 30 or 40 years ago is one of the seminal, and he is one of the masters of Vedic astrologers here in North America. He is amazing. So you got exactly the right person.
And I was crying in the session, and he said that.
Yeah.
I asked him, I'm 35, 36. Do you see any marriage or kids in my chart? He said, he sees a yellow light. He sees yellow light. He said that if I put my spiritual life on the forefront of whatever the heck I do in life, that is going to make me successful and make me feel grounded. So he said that put your spiritual life on the forefront and don't rush to get married or have kids. Just take your time. Take your time. He said, don't rush. So please continue. So I thought, okay, Sedona keeps coming. So that was my relationship with Sedona. And now it has changed.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and so when I got here, I mean, you know, so it was a very compressed decision process. So basically, as I was still teaching, you know, I went back in January but I realized when I proposed in April and she said, yes, that I didn't want to stay around in San Jose, because although I was every other week, I'd go visit her and she'd come back, you know, that was, you know, very romantic and all this, but it was still not a relationship that, you know, was together. So I basically then retired, like went down to HR and said, hey, it's time for me to retire. Let's put the package together. And they were quite good about that. I said goodbye to everybody. And basically that summer, I June 5th, 2017, I showed up here in Sedona with my U-Haul and my car and the trailer. So, you know, it was that fast.
I saw two cars in your driveway, Mercedes and Lexus. Which car?
Yeah, mine's the 2001 SL500. Yeah, that's mine. Yeah, it's an old vintage car, and it's a gorgeous car. And I'm not a big car guy, to be honest with you, but no, I could tell you stories about my grandfather who taught me how to rebuild engines when I was six. But that's a different story about cars. But Sedona, when I came here, I mean, I didn't know much about Sedona. I know when you came here, whether you did. I didn't know much about the spiritual piece of this. I just knew this woman I loved lives here. So I came here, and before we got married, I basically asked her in the summer if we could have a party to bring all of her friends, because I knew I was going to propose to her. And so I was going to basically use that party to introduce myself to her friends, but I didn't tell her that. So I was kind of being sneaky, but you know. It worked out perfectly. So Ranjita and all of her friends came. She had 50 of her friends show up at our house, and you saw our front room. It's a beautiful place. So I was my first introduction to Sedona, other than her, was her 50 friends like Ranjita. So I felt this incredible community, men, women, heartfelt community, spiritually deep. You know, when you talk with them, they're connecting with you. They're going deep. They're not doing the shallow stuff that you find in many other conversations. That's where I met Ranjita. And what she said, the very first thing is, Richard, you've come pre-adored to our community. Welcome to our community. What an amazing, I've never had a group of people open up their arms like that to me. And it's been great ever since. And developing relationships with all these individuals in these groups have been just a wonderful experience for me. So coming here was a huge transition away from the Silicon Valley stuff, clearly. But Sedona is now where I find my heart is, where it's been my calling to come to Sedona, because for me, the energy here, which is deep, vortex, transformational in nature, has enabled my life over the last 6+ years to grow, to deepen, and my spiritual beliefs and practices deepen even more so. So when you ask the question as well, what's the tangents between, you know, now and then? Thousands and thousands of hours of sessions, working on myself, working, Deborah and I working together. Thousands and thousands of hours of meditation. Working in the community in various ways with people who have problems to outreach to them, to sit down with them, to listen to them and talk to them, to hold them in your arms as they weep because they need somebody to hold that space for them, and to learn how to do that with heartfelt openness. You don't learn that out of a book. You don't learn that in places that don't value spirituality first. And that's what I have found here in Sedona, is a spiritual community that's, again, that if you go on ChatGPT and you ask ChatGPT, list, rank the world's top spiritual healing places, Sedona's number one on that list. There's a reason for that. And it's an amazing place to be. And I am so happy to make that decision to listen to Kuan Yin in the sense that you should be with this woman, that you can do wonderful things together. And we're doing that. I mean, Sedona Soul Adventure is an amazing thing, and I continue to help it with my business background. And I have a different perspective that helps Deborah. Her, as you know, she was a lawyer for 20 years. So, you know, her background's pretty strong in that area. So it's a great team. But with all these amazing practitioners that you've met, Dennis, and other people like them, they're a part of this team that makes this just an incredible opportunity to help people in their lives. And I'm going to make a little political statement here about the word transformation, because a lot of people use a transformation, like come to a weekend transformational workshop. Well, that's not what we mean. When we say Sedona Soul Adventure, we talk about deep personal transformation, the stuff that cleans out the gunk permanently, that a Monday morning at noon, it doesn't come back when your boss triggers you again, because it's still there. No, we get it gone. We get it gone. So when your boss comes back and does it, you're not triggered anymore because it's gone.
So as a listener, if I want to come to Sedona, to the Sedona Soul Adventure retreat, for how many days do you recommend someone to come to Sedona and do this work, and how should they reach out?
Well, not to sound too commercial here, but since you asked, you know, how do you, here's the freaking, if you feel like, and again, this is the what if you feel like whatever you're doing in your life is no longer working for you, start it that way. Meaning that, you know, a lot of people come to us, have done therapy for years, psychotherapy, been on drugs, but have not found their life to significantly change in the way that they feel happier, more connected to other people, whether it's their family, relationship, or whatever, that they still have trouble at the office, that whatever's going on in their life, or they have a tragedy, like a sudden loss of a family member, or they're now transitioning out of a career and are asking now the big questions, like, what am I supposed to do for the rest of my life? And what is my life really all about? Who am I really?
That's the question I'm asking myself. What is the next chapter in my life?
Yeah. And so when you're at that point where you're saying to yourself, a lot of people go to their friends, they go to their ministers, their imams, their priests, their family, you know, whatever, to ask these questions, right? Gurus, take your choice. And you get a certain level of answer for that. And that's all good. But if you're looking for a complete, I call it power wash of the soul, where you go in and you clear that gunk out, and some of the gunk that we accumulate during our lives is part of it. But one of the things that this process does is clear out the gunk from previous lifetimes, from karmic sources. And that's a distinguishing for a lot of people who do weekend stuff. Is, well, I had a really great yoga retreat. Well, good for you. But you didn't clean out that gunk that was from before. It's still there. That gets cleaned out in the Soul Adventure. So because everybody's individual, and since it's individuals and couples, because everybody's different, there's no one size fits all. I mean, like I went to like the Cancun for a big name 7-day workshop with 1,000 of my closest friends, 1,000. So for the whole week, I was searching for, what is this person on the stage saying that connects with me and my problems? Not much. And I bet you if other people asked about that and said, well, what's your particular situation? Did this person directly address what your life is and what your life situation? I bet most of them would say no. It's a hell of a lot of fun meeting a lot of people. So what Sedona Soul Adventure is, it looks at what your issue is as an individual or as a couple. And everybody's unique. That's the point. So it's custom designed for what you need right now. And it's different for everybody. So there's no one size fits all. So when you have 70 plus practitioners and all these modalities, what do? We have people called soul guides that you talk with. You tell them what's going on. They get underneath because most of these people are intuitive. They understand what's going on. And they basically build a retreat. Singles retreats are 3 to 4 days. Couples are maybe 4 to 5 days in length. Some are longer. I mean, we had one gentleman 20-some years ago come in for 10 days. Because he really wanted to go deep. So he's an internationally best known energy healer on the planet.
What's his name? Can you say that?
Yeah, I could do all Rob Wergin, W-E-R-G-I-N. He's an amazing energy healer, hands-on energy healer.
Well, can you repeat the name, please?
Rob Wergin, W-E-R-G-I-N. He comes to Sedona. He's a friend, all the full disclosure. But because he's in a way, he's a soul brother. I mean, when you talk about spirituality and you get to a point where you're in a mode of service, because Deborah and I, for example, if you haven't kind of got, just like you, you're sitting here doing a podcast, so you're doing this as a service to help your people listening. That's how we live our lives. It's in service. How do we help other people do significant deep transformation in their lives? That's
this
the key
is so thing. Interesting. Sedona Soul Adventure. I connected with Sedona. So here's a story, quick story. So I came to US. I mean, I came to Austin in 2016. So technically, I came to US in 2014. I stayed here for 6 months. I went back to India, came to Austin in 2016. Mm-hmm. Things happened in 2016, yeah. And my journey started. In 2017, I started looking online for some retreat centers, meditation retreat centers. Right. Some names came up in Dallas. And then I connected with Sedona Soul Adventure. I started following the newsletter. And in 2020, after 3 years, from 2017 to 2020, I sent email on the newsletter, "Hey, I've been following your newsletters, and I would love to have you on the podcast, Deborah." And she responded after 2-3 follow-ups in 2020 that happened. And now we are in 2023. We are having this chat. So how universe connects dots, and we don't see all these dots.
And you know, your story is not unusual in the sense that there are some people who've been on Deborah's newsletter for 10 years. 10 years before they make the call. Because, you know, they're interested, they kind of, I don't know. But over they, you know, because you know, Deborah, you know, newsletters, it's really interesting to see the subjects and what she talks about and how it connects with people. So depending upon what happens, some people, you know, a week later, 2 weeks, I said, I got to make the call. What's happening in my life, right? I need the help. I need to help get through this. And when you get to that point in your life where it's significantly the motivation to change is more important than the motivation to, you know, to stay in the same way, that people feel like I'm willing to risk the change. Because let's be honest, if you're having a hard time dealing with some past tragedy, I mean, a lot of people have, you know, horrible upbringings, and you know, whether it's abuse, physical, mental, take whatever it is. So for them to say, I want to now deal with why I'm acting so odd with my current partner about certain situations that are triggering my past core wounds that I experienced as a 5-year-old, that's a scary place to be. So you have to be willing to, it takes a tremendous amount of courage from my perspective to be willing to step back into that 5-year-old state, to relive that experience, the terror, the abject helplessness of all of, and all the emotions that just overwhelm you today when you think back and sit back in that spot, because your brain holds them in there, because your brain is that neural network, and you listen, it just over and over and over rebuilds those neural network patterns such that it's heavy in there. But if you're willing to go back and step into that and let it come to the surface, and the energies in Sedona is one of the very few places, if the only places on the planet, that those energies naturally come to the surface to be able to be dealt with. That's what makes it such an amazingly unique healing place on the planet. If you're willing to do the work and step in there and take the risk, and man, it takes a lot of guts, a lot of whatever the right phrase is for you and anybody else. If you're willing to take the risk, and you have to be open, that's not going to feel good necessarily to begin with. But once that transition occurs and you're on the other side, when you go through that dark night of the soul, so to speak, you look in the mirror, you see somebody different. you feel different. Your energy is different. You look at life differently because you've taken those, we talked about a model of, you know, we're kind of like, we're all balloons and we're in this basket. We have all these heavy weights holding us down, man, this gunk, and we start throwing them out. We start lifting up, getting lighter, and we get out of the gunk. Finally, we're free. So then you're free to be your authentic self. And we have other people who, once you start doing that, says, well, okay, let's look at who you really want to be and who you really are and help you go through that process too. Because we have 70 practitioners that do a lot of different things, including clearing energy. And once you figure that all out, what do you want to be when you grow up? Because
you already know,
it's just having somebody who's an expert to help you figure that out. And then when you go home, we have coaches who follow up with you on what's going on. How's it going? We've given you some tools when you go home that things for particularly you need for you. Like some people tap, some people, we go back with breath work all the time because that's a very beautiful way to open up a lot of those can of worms and release that stuff. And how are you doing that? We've got wonderful coaches that help people go home and get reestablished in a new life, because the worst thing you can do is go back to your regular day and then suddenly all the regular pressures hit you and you don't, and you're like, it's like, this is the term that Deborah's used recently that I really like. It's like you're a little energy baby. You're young, you're small. You've not really learned how to grow up in your new energy body because it's so fresh and new. How do you deal with now all these big bad people running around you? You know, think of that model. So we're helping you learn how to walk, talk, and chew gum in your new energy body, so to speak. That helps you then do what? Well, it's like the, you throw the stone in the pond, it ripples out. So you as an individual, Nishant, you go back home. People, and this is not an unusual, they go back home, they said, people walk up to them and they knew, says, there's something different about you, right? Is it like you're wearing a new dress or something? Because they know there's something different, but they can't process that it's on the inside. They think it's got to be on the outside, right? So that's what Sedona Solar Venture does, and why we think Deborah and I, in looking at this company and seeing how it serves individuals and couples, and ultimately then enough of them to serve humanity in this big transition that we're making energetically, vibrationally, whatever the model you want to use, is that that's part of our service that Kuan Yin told us about 6 years ago in terms of our connection, our betrothing, the way I understood it then, is how we connect together to help that. And so that's part of our mission, part of our heart, part of our destiny. And when I believe is that when we all connect with our own internal destiny, and everybody's different, when you connect with that destiny, you have now a higher meaning in your life, a higher purpose to work against. And then you have this internal satisfaction because you know you're on the journey. You don't have to be there. You don't have to be at the top of the mountain. But you know, as you climb up, as you're walking up, sweating and sometimes stumbling, but you know it's there.
You will stumble. You will stumble.
Of course you will. And if you weren't stumbling, you aren't human. You aren't in 3D anymore. We're here because of the stuff that comes up. That's why we're here. So
before pressing recording, I told you that. You asked me, how am I doing? I said, I'm not having a great day today, but I'm enjoying this conversation with you.
Good. Well, good. Yeah, because again, the stuff that comes up is supposed to come up. I mean, Deborah wrote a book about it, Journey to Happy. The idea that there's nothing wrong with you. There isn't. Even if you have a disease, there's a reason why you have the disease. There's a spiritual reason why. There's a spiritual reason why you might have stubbed your toe, or you got into a car accident, or some other bad situation you're up. There's a lesson in there. Now, how do you find that lesson spiritually? How do you then take whatever that gunk is that lesson represents away from you? Well, I think I got a company that can help you with that if you're interested.
So when I went to Sedona last year, after 3-4 days, something happened in my foot and I could not walk properly. Mm-hmm. I was like, something is happening here energetically, and I couldn't even walk. So since you mentioned that, nothing is wrong with us. And if we feel a disease or something in our body, there is a connection. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be a muscle-based pain or it could be energetic pain. You know, most of the times they are energetic pains if you really open ourselves, open our mind and open our hearts.
Sure. I mean, you know, I for example, threw out my back last year playing competitive tennis. And my MRI says it. But the spiritual answer is that I was holding myself back from my future, from fully experiencing the future, because I was blocking myself because I was afraid of the unknown. That's part of my thing.
So how did you?
Because I was afraid of...
Fixing is not it, but how did you
shift what that? The shift, remember, you can shift like that. The shift for me like that was the realization that as I went down underneath and underneath and underneath and underneath, what I was really, really, really saying is that I did not have faith and trust that the universe has got me covered. I didn't have faith in the universe. I didn't think God loved me. And because of that, I didn't have faith that my future was going to be awesome, perfect, whatever it was perfect mean for me. And so I was going to stop myself from going to the future. And the way you stop yourself is making sure you can't really move very well. That's your back. That's where you're carrying your weight. So the spiritual lesson for me with my lower back pain was I was afraid of going forward because I didn't trust the universe having my back. Get it?
Yeah.
Got that, guess what happened? Yes, there was some physical stuff that had to be cleared. And so there was some pain there, sure. But for the last 3 months, I've not had any of the S1 pain that literally was I could not walk. Because once I figured out the root, I knew then it was really my belief in disbelief in the trust in God. And once I got to that, that's a spiritual answer. That's not anything else. So, yeah.
Yep.
So, again, foot, back, elbow. There are books about different parts of the body represent different types of things, right? Was it Louise Hayes or whatever wrote a book about, if you hurt your finger, if it's on the right hand or left hand, it has different meaning in terms of the spiritual pieces of that. Some really good lessons there because there's some universality to locations of energy in the body. There's ways of getting some hints there. Or in Sedona, you go do a session with somebody who's expert in that and they'll help you figure that out.
Yeah.
And these days, Zoom is so easy,
Yeah, intuitive healers can scan. I had a session with someone from Hong Kong. She scanned me on the Zoom last year. She scanned me and said, this is happening.
And we do Sedona Soul Adventures on Zoom too. You don't even have to be here if you don't want to wander around and hike in the Red Rocks in the morning before it's 110 degrees this time.
But doing this work in person is totally different when you are in person.
Oh, well, it is, but what we have found and during COVID, we had to go sort out this because COVID people couldn't travel anywhere. And we flipped over the company into an online model. And we just started doing a bunch of Zoom stuff that it's just as effective. The transformations are just as deep and profound because energy is energy, as you noted with your Hong Kong example. You can do energy healing anywhere on the planet, anywhere back. So you could in the universe, if you really want to think that far out, but you can. So our people here connect in with you. There you go. You can do it over Zoom. So yeah, we can do that too. And because we have this, again, incredible breadth of practitioners, we can dial in for our clients specific to each individual's needs and don't do one size fits all like groups generally are.
I'm definitely going to reach out to you guys to connect me with your
practitioners. Everybody's in a different place in their life, right? And so, there's no one size fits all. Some people want to come in for, they want to work on A, B, and C. And when they get here, it turns out to be something different. And that's not unusual because, what happens is you come here for, like, say, for instance, you're having trouble with your partner or whatever. And when you come here, you find out it's something else that's really more in your field that needs to be worked on. So we kind of go where you are. So, it's part of the really interesting part of the process that I've observed over the last 6 years is that, people walk in here, individuals or couples. I mean, the classic case, couple comes in, the gal's talking about what's going on, the guy sitting in the corner, kind of turned away, arm short, because, she dragged his butt in there, right? She dragged him in. He was like, oh, do I got to really do this? because, you know, American culture guys are you know, we don't want to talk about stuff. We want to keep it to ourselves and da-da-da-da. The same couple that had that, 6 days later, I saw them walking out the door hand in hand back in love. How did that happen? They were so far apart when they walked in the door. How did that possibly happen? Yeah, I mean, over and over. So what Deborah's put together in, you know, the business she put together and how she put together this, you know, the technology behind transformation, which is, of course, guided, it's very, very part of what the universe wants us to do, wants us to help other people achieve their personal journey one step at a time. And sometimes that steps leads them to Sedona, leads them to a soul adventure, leads them to this incredible experience, and leads them to another part of their life. It's beautiful. I mean, there's so much personal satisfaction for Deborah and I, another way of saying it, that we see people take the risk, come do the work, because it is work, it's hard. But when they go home, the rewards are amazing. It's testimonials that we have on our website are just like, you know, this much of what's going on. It's really much bigger than that. And it's just amazing. And that's not hyperbole. Okay. It really isn't. It really isn't.
I need to comment. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, Richard. So it's been a fantastic, heartfelt conversation with you over the last 90 minutes or so.
Oh, absolutely.
Is there anything else you want to add before we wrap up our recording?
Well, again, the one thing that I want to at least put out there, and I'm going to make this as a general blanket statement that I know it applies for me, and I think it applies to everybody else, and I wish people would think about this if they don't feel it does yet, is your spiritual life and how it can lead your life in all aspects of it. And if you're willing to do the inner work, the inner journey, and it can be dark and lonely and scary at times, but if you're willing to do that, it's an amazing other side. It's an amazing place to be. And I believe we are all on this planet to go through some form of journey. We all make the choices on what that journey is. I would just like to suggest that if people want to make the deep dive and do it in a very short period of time, we have ways to help. But that's what Sedona is about, is the healing journey for every individual, whether you're here working with us or here hiking or meditating or simply just bathing in this beautiful energy, vortex energy of Sedona. Take whatever piece of that you want. But taking your life and not worrying about how many freaking likes you have on Instagram and realizing that's the external world, that the internal world is how you're truly measured. Because when you take your last breath, does it really matter how many Instagram likes you have? Or does it matter who you really are as a human being? What's more important at that moment? And I think that's the point that a lot of people forget. If you think about it and work yourself backwards from that moment, you realize your spiritual life is, in fact, your most important work you can ever do. And it can be expressed through your jobs. It can be expressed through your relationship. It can be expressed to the people you work with. It can be expressed with, you know, whatever you do. To me, that's what I've learned in my lifetime. And if that can come out and say your spirituality leads my work and work being very broad, I think that's something that I would think would be a great finish for this podcast. And as sort of a call to arms for people. And the call to arm is go inward, go for the real stuff, go for who you really are, go find out who you really are, live it, right? Don't hold back because that's who you are. Go find yourself, go figure it out, have fun.
Universe, God, whoever, Allah, Jesus, they have the best plan for us. That's the reality.
And you have to let go. You have to let go. Yeah. The mind is all about control. Hey, when you grew up, you had to have a mind. I spent the rest of my life after my teenage years figuring out how to get rid of my mind, get into my heart.
Yeah. Well, Richard, it was so, I had so much fun and it was my honor to have you in Namaste.
Well, Namaste. Thank you so much for inviting me on your podcast. I don't know if any of this makes any sense to anybody. If it does, fabulous. If it doesn't, enjoy. But thank you for the opportunity. And I really enjoy the conversation. And I look forward to see you next time you're out here or when we're in your neck of the woods.